ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Well, I've been looking forward to meeting you for a while, and I'm really impressed with your Sankirtan on the street and with the whole Pandavasena movement. I've seen how devotees who grew up around Krishna consciousness develop into leaders for the whole world. And even one person who has his or her intention fixed in the concept of pure devotional service, which can be really practically executed through following the open order that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave to everybody in the world, which was try to do good for others, can actually change whole communities, one person, but to speak of actually whole countries, or actually the whole world. Technology is always troublesome. It's like putting a man on the moon or something. So, before I say much more, I just want to hear something from you. I heard your kirtan, which is really powerful, when I came in. So that vibration, I could tell how powerful of a sangha this is, but maybe a few of you could just say why you came here tonight, what you hoped to take away, or what you were thinking might be the benefit of coming. Go ahead. We're amongst friends here.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much for gracing us with your presence. I think a lot of us are here because some of us know through Office of Panasana, some of us more specifically through Sacred Street Party, but I think a lot of us maybe want to improve our ability to preach and spread the movement to others.
Yeah, and plug it, and then plug it in again.
I think particularly with myself, I feel like maybe not qualified.
No, the other one. I'm very sorry. It's just this technology thing is really... That has to be plugged into the computer, otherwise it doesn't work. That has nothing to do with this.
Yes, I'm just trying to find the right cable for this one.
Okay. Please excuse me.
Basically, just in short, we want to be able to preach better. And I think you're one of the real leaders, pioneers, real inspiration in that. And so if we can get a few drops of some of the power that you have, I think we can go a long way.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anybody else? Yes, Prabhu.
I'm interested to hear your opinion and advice on how to keep fresh in something that becomes repetitive.
Okay.
So we chant every day, we try to serve every day, we meditate every day, we pray every day. We do the same old thing every day, and the years go on. How do we retain that freshness, that innocence?
Does anybody have a dictionary?
On our phones.
Well, that's a dictionary. Okay. Everything's on your phone. Why don't you look up the word fresh, and we'll see what we're talking about. Somebody quick. How to maintain freshness.
Has it for food?
What?
Not previously known or used.
No, okay, listen, this is the definition of fresh. Oh, no, you can talk. Okay, go ahead.
Not previously known or used, new or different.
I say it again because it's really interesting.
Not previously known or used.
Not previously known or used.
New or different.
New or different. That's what fresh means. And one of the descriptions of the experience in the spiritual world is the pervasive feeling there is called wonderment, adbhuta, which means that at every moment there's a sense that it's new. It's never getting old. And that's inherent in the spiritual nature. Krishna Kirtan's gone, answering this question. So, naturally, Prabhu, it may not be worth it for this thing. Let's just shut it down and, because we're losing valuable time. Because we're not even close, right? They didn't have this at Naimasarnya. Of course, Kurukshetra was live streamed through Sanjaya. He had a natural, direct connection. As Prabhupada talks about that, he said they had, you know, this television going on. It was more subtle energy at that time. Now we're into mechanical, technological connections. So I was just talking about freshness because he asked that question and we got distracted, but we heard the definition of what it means to be fresh. And who can remember what it was? You say it again.
Not previously known or used.
Not previously known or used.
New or different.
New or different. So Krishna and his names are described as being not previously known. Every time one chants, when there's actually a connection to the sound vibration. By a connection, I mean that there's two things, full attention and sincerity. And actually, the two things go together. Because if one chants with sincerity, then there's a natural kind of connection. And in that, there's a freshness that Prabhupada describes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita as hearing the sound of the Maha Mantra as a unique sound, as if you've never heard anything like it before. And that's possible through giving one's full attention, especially to japa. Because, as you might have noticed, our acharya has mandated only one thing to do. There's a few things to not do. But there's only one thing that he mandated that we do, and that is to chant a certain amount of japa. That is to be fixed in what is the acharya upasana, or worshipping the acharya through following the instruction. Is it possible to just get a little more air in here? Air is good, right? So freshness is the most important aspect, experiencing that uniqueness every day. Otherwise, Rupa Goswami says niyamagraha. Niyamagraha means doing the process without trying to get that freshness. So around January 1st every year, people go and sign up at a gym. And then they quit around, I don't know, January 15th. Or they maybe don't quit. But when they go there and they figure out that it actually takes a little work to pick a weight up and put it back down again, just imagine if they went there and they said, you know, I like going to the gym because it seems like a good idea, but I'm not actually going to pick the weight up. I'll just move my arms as if I was. And so there's a way in which you mentioned, after some time, I might stop trying to find the freshness in the chanting. And instead, I just chant, but I'm not really present. Have you ever been reading a book and you get through one paragraph and then all of a sudden you realize you have no idea what you just read? Have you? Now you know how I feel all the time. That's because our attention wasn't there. In order to have cognition, you actually have to place your attention somewhere. And here's something interesting to think about. First thing is, we don't really have anything. Because whatever we have right now will be taken back. Any agreement on that? Two people, three. Four, five? Well, how do you mean that? Why do you agree with that? Tell me what you're thinking.
Because Krishna is the proprietor and not us, so he would reclaim his property.
Yeah, reclaim it, and it's, I mean, you know, when will he reclaim it?
Well,
When's that going to be?
Any moment.
Any moment? That's a little precarious. I've said this before, but I'll say it again. It was an original realization I had, and kind of profound. I was taking a nap in the afternoon back in California. Good place for naps. And I woke up from my nap, about 20 minutes. And I was lying on my left side so I could feel my heart beating. Have you ever had this happen? And all of a sudden, all my attention went to my heart as I just realized it's beating. And then I just had this moment of clarity that I have no control over whether it's beating or not. And then I had a conversation with my heart. And I said, thank you very much for all the work you've been doing. And my heart answered and said, you're welcome, but you really don't have to thank me. I'm just doing my duty. And by the way, I could stop at any minute. I could be asked to stop. And I can't tell you when that is. And when I swung my feet over and put them on the floor, my perspective on the world was very much different than it was before I had that conversation. So everything we have is hanging in the balance, really, if you think about it. That's a good frame of mind to develop before you start chanting your japa. It's true. But there is one thing that is ours now and always will be ours, no matter where we are, and for eternity, we'll always have the same thing that's quintessentially ours that we'll never lose. What do you think that one thing is? What? Okay. But you may or may not have it at some point. In other words, you may forget about it. Sometimes people stop chanting.
Our soul and its desire.
Desire, okay. Yeah, that's getting close to what I'm thinking. Do you know what I'm thinking?
Free will.
Yeah. But free will, what's a very practical word to describe how we enact our free will? Choice, even more active, freedom, still very, very philosophical, but the word I'm thinking starts with an A. It's got two, three T's in it. Yes, because one of my mantras is where attention goes, energy flows. And there's a way in which, if you just think about it, just humor me for a minute, that the only thing we really have ultimately is the choice of where to place our attention in any given time. And if you think about it moment to moment, you have that choice, especially as a human. When you're a human, you can decide where to place your attention. And so if we labor to place our attention on the holy name, that's a kind of respect that we're giving, because you don't have to if you don't want to. And when you do that, then there's a kind of freshness. I'm still answering your question. And that kind of practice every day, even if you can't keep your attention on it for very long, if you just keep doing it and bring it back, it's like any other discipline. If you practice, keep bringing your attention back to it, to that is the chanting, listening to the holy name, then you develop a skill. And actually, then you develop a taste. The freshness is there. So with any of the practices, it means putting your attention, being aware that you're aware. This is a trick for chanting japa, is when you're chanting, be aware that you're chanting. Because it's altogether possible to chant without being aware. And what was the thing that you said you came for?
I think we often feel, well, I definitely feel not worthy to preach, or feel maybe very much out of our depth, and feel, yeah, how can we present Srila Prabhupada's teachings in a way that's, like, you know, in an appropriate way to people on the street.
Oh, God, thank you. Well, let me tell you something all that may shock you. You're so qualified, all of you. I mean, first of all, if you just take it from a socioeconomic point of view, you come from the most upwardly mobile section of the population of the world in general. You come from cultured backgrounds. In and of itself, that would be, you'd be worthy of teaching people all over the world. But it wouldn't mean anything, really, because a lot of people have that and teach it. But because you have the value of Krishna consciousness. You know what it is, and you know how important it is. You know the difference between the categories of energies, right? What do I mean by that before I continue? That you know what the difference between categories of energies. Someone just say something intelligent about it. Don't be afraid to make a mistake or whatever, but just say it. Prabhu?
Material energy and spiritual energy.
That's something. There's one other energy too that the Vishnu Purana mentions. It says, Vishnu Shakti Paraprokta Shetar Gyakya Tatapara Avidya Karma Samgyangya Tritiya Shakti Rishate. Three categories of energies. It's important to know the difference. There's the spiritual energy, the material energy, and then what else?
Subtle.
The
subtle.
Marginal. Marginal, yeah. Who is the marginal?
Jeep.
We are. The soul is marginal. What does that mean?
You could
go any direction you want. You can be the material or spiritual energy. So because you know that the difference in consequence of associating with the higher energy and the lower energy, that gives you a great advantage. And that's a basic principle to teach people. And really, people out in the world are starving for your association. I just came from New York. I was at the Rathiatra there, where we had a record-breaking year for book distribution, partly because we stacked everything together like this. And I met so many young people. They have a lot of energy, and they're eager to do something in their life. They just don't know what to do. There's not a lot of options, because the only thing they know is one category of energy, and that's the material energy. And they're not sure how to do good for others, which is a natural propensity for a lot of young people. And you do. You know that. And you also have the delivery system. I mean, you know exactly how to package it and give it to other people. For instance, I mean, what do I mean by that, would you say? The delivery system or what we're delivering in a neat package. What kind of things can we give to people that are easy to deliver?
Books.
Definitely books. I was on the new way, and prasadam. And? Holy names.
Yeah.
I mean, those three things are normally listed in one package. You know, you can give them together or in pieces, but I was on the New York subway coming home, and one of the devotees handed somebody a book on the subway. We all got off. There was a huge crowd. It was very gray in there, but all of a sudden I noticed one person standing over by the pillar just reading the book. It was like one of those movies, you know, where everybody's in gray except for one person highlighted. He's just lit up. And I was thinking as we got on the elevator to go upstairs, as he was standing there reading it, what a powerful delivery system it is. Because books, well, I don't mean to be self-serving. I'm not trying to sell my book. It's not mine anyway. I gave it to the BBT. But a book, actually, if you think about it objectively, it's a delivery system. And this it's a container, and inside there are idea seeds. These are spiritual idea seeds. It's very powerful. In one of the presentations I give on book distribution, I talk about, just in a sociological way, political, sociological way, the way in which books have set trends in the world. The major trends you see in economics, the major trends you see politically, major trends you see spiritually, they've all been precipitated by mass distribution of one kind of literature or another. And I proved that through research. There's a lot in here also. And so the delivery system of the book is very powerful. So a little conviction about the uniqueness of your own life and what you have to offer. And that's important to have that perspective, because if you appreciate Bhagavad Gita, for instance. I was with Dave Amrita Swami recently, and he was just remarking about his appreciation of Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is. And he said something that stuck in my mind. He said, if anybody reads even half of this book, by the time they get halfway through, they'll be yanked out of the material world. That's a powerful realization. And so that's One of the reasons that we distribute books is because, first of all, it's effective. You'll find that despots will tend to want to restrict what kind of books people read. Have you ever noticed that? Like, I went to Vietnam about 6 years ago to get the Bhagavad Gita printed in Vietnamese. But it's a communist country, so as soon as we got off the plane, we were being watched and monitored. And in order to get the Bhagavad Gita printed, we had to go to special governments, go through government censors. They had to go through the whole book and make sure it wasn't subversive and so forth. Then it was could go out through certain channels. That's pretty moderate. In some places like Russia, you know, in the early days, the penalty for publishing books, which devotees did clandestinely in basements and things like that, was that you could be imprisoned for life or killed for printing a book. Must be something in that, right? So if you have a little conviction about the importance, which really comes from studying the book yourself and having a moment where of clarity where you really feel like Krishna's speaking directly to you, then you have something to distribute to other people. And the other really good thing about going out into the great unknown is it's exciting every time you do it. When you cross the threshold of your house, then there's this exhilaration that takes place because you don't know what's going to happen. Oftentimes when we go to do the Sankirtan festivals, introduce communities to book distribution, people will come to the seminar and listen how to distribute a book. They'll listen to the philosophy, the legacy. But when it's time to go out, after all the talking's done, then a lot of people hear their mom calling them for a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and they have to go home suddenly. Because it's a little nerve-wracking, isn't it, just walking out the door? Please say yes.
Yes.
I know. I feel like that every time, and I have for many, many years, because you don't know what's going to happen. And that's a really good place to live, is in that have a little edginess in your life. Otherwise, life is kind of boring. And as I like to say, try to live outside your comfort zone. Be comfortable when you're outside your comfort zone. And be uncomfortable when you're in your comfort zone. And if you stay in that, I mean, of course, you don't have to, you know, wear a horsehair shirt all day like some Catholics do to feel completely uncomfortable and you can't sleep. But my point is, if you're pushing yourself a little past the edge, which Sankirtan always does, then it's a really good growth space. You'll grow a lot from that. And what I find with anybody who goes on Sankirtan, but young people is in Krishna consciousness, like all of you, is that you haven't realized how powerful you are yet and how much you have to offer. And that just with a little bit of confidence, you get a little bottle about that big. And if you just take one molecule of confidence that I could do this, I can be really effective, then you get a kind of momentum that carries you through. And another thing is kind of adjusting your expectations. Do you know how to do that? Do you know why to do that? Well, in business, adjusting expectations is really important because if you build up your expectations, if the customer builds up his or her expectations too much for your product, doesn't live up, then they get disappointed, right? So companies try to adjust people's expectations. How do you think Krishna adjusts our expectations in the Bhagavad Gita for the material world? What would you say? What kind of way does he adjust our expectation for about our experience in the material world? Would you say he tells us it's a very positive experience? Go ahead, you expound. What's your name?
Hash.
Hash, nice to meet you.
I think he does the opposite. He just explains how you just can't gain any true satisfaction in this material world. So that sort of lowers, or you don't really expect to get true pleasure in this material world.
Yeah. What if you actually believe that? Not you, I'm saying me. What if I actually believe that? then anything, if you don't expect much, well, Krishna builds up the expectation that that it's a place of misery, from the topmost planet down to the lowest, if you actually believe that or understand it. And then when you go out and present Krishna consciousness to other people, understanding that what you're offering them is extremely vital, then it's a wonderful experience. And also, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say that when you offer Krishna consciousness and you're rejected, has that ever happened to anybody? Yes? Can you remember a time? When you offer, let's just say you were distributing books and you offered a book and someone said no. Has that ever happened? Can you tell us about it? Like how it made you feel?
He was Christian.
A Christian?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then he started preaching to me.
Yes.
So I kind of just stood there and then Rishi kind of just said, oh, there's a phone call for me, so we got out of the situation.
Good for Rishi. So how did you feel when they weren't interested? Dejected, yeah.
But I guess it was, like someone told me that it's better to just leave people with a good impression. Like even if you can't give them a book or anything, just leave them with, okay, these Hare Krishnas are cool. They're not like preachy, they're not in your face. So.
Yeah. Well, here's some good news from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. He said, when you go out to teach Krishna consciousness to others and you're rejected, he said, you know that feeling you get when that happens, that dejection? He said, it gives you spiritual blood for your spiritual body. Chidrakta means spiritual blood for your chidsharira. It's putting spiritual blood in your spiritual body. He advocated that to go out. You know, unflinching devotional service comes from facing some circumstances that make you flinch. We have a lot of kids at our center. I come from ISKCON of Silicon Valley. And I grew up with a lot of these kids. I can't believe how fast they grew up. But when a lot of them were 5 years old, I decided to do an experiment and see if five-year-olds could distribute books. So I took five five-year-olds out. We actually have photographic evidence of this. It was about 11 or 12 years ago. A couple parents accompanied me, and we went door to door with them. First door we went to, I could tell somebody was struggling to open the door. It was a really weird situation. The knob was turning and nobody opened. But finally, the door opened partially and we saw that there was some kind of a patient inside that had maybe Alzheimer's or something, some kind of dementia, and with a caretaker. And one of the kids put the book near the crack in the door and the patient grabbed onto the book. But the caretaker was trying to get the patient to let go of it. And this existential struggle took place. We didn't have much to do with it, but the kids were kind of like just amazed at what was happening. It was, I think, maybe the first story we went to. And the struggle back, forth, back, forth, back, forth. And all of a sudden, the patient got the better hand and pulled the book inside, and the door went click, and all the kids went, yay! It was profound to see them and their reaction, you know, how happy they were. They sensed, you know, some kind of victory was just won. And then we went to the next house, and there was a woman standing on her porch of her house, and there was a picket fence around the house. You know what a picket fence is? Yeah. And so I was dressed like this, and the kids, you know, all had books in their hands, and she saw us coming down the street as kind of a horde. And we were just outside the perimeter of her house, and she looked over at me and looked at the kids. She goes, oh, no. She said, I'm a Christian. But the kids had no idea what that meant, and they kind of enthusiastically burst through the gate. I was still standing in the periphery just watching. And they surrounded her, and, you know, they were holding the book, and they were opening it for all, almost talking at once, and goes, see, here's the cow, and this is Krishna. Krishna's the Supreme Personality Godhead. And they're like, they're going through the book, And she's charmed by these kids, right? They're five. And she looks over at me and she goes, all right, how much is it? And then I realized, this will probably work. But what really worked was when the parents started taking the kids out, was that the kids started developing a sense of the world. I mean, they started meeting all kinds of people from all different cultures, going door to door, going to streets with under the supervision of their parents. And one of the devotees, Kameshwari, who heads that program, told me one day something that really was profound. And the first time they got rejected when they were going door to door, and the kids felt dejected. So it was an apartment complex. They went to the playground right nearby. They all sat in a circle and they talked about what it meant to be rejected and why they had been rejected, and how it wasn't their fault. It was just a reaction that some people have. And they took about half an hour to process it. Like, what happened? Why do we all feel like this? And when they came out of that, they were edified. They had grown. And I see over the years that the kids who grew up in that environment, they have a kind of natural, what I like to call street smarts. They have a sense for how the world works and how to work within the world that's unusual, that you don't get anywhere else. And it's, therefore, I like to call a book distribution a high sadhana. We do it first and foremost for our own purification, going out to experience that, what it's like to offer to others. Now, actually, it's pretty rare to be rejected outright. You know where the time is that we're most feel that pain of rejection? Where do you think? Were you pointing to your heart?
No.
Are you just scratching? Where do you think you experience the most rejection? Or the possibility of rejection? That's kind of giving it away.
Mind.
Yeah. Who said it? You did? Okay, thank you. In the mind, people all the time, you know, think this is going to happen, that happened, and it barely ever happens. Mostly, people are either indifferent or they're very open to Krishna consciousness. And that's a revelation also, because there's ways in which the mind tells us, like, this person will take, that person won't take, but when you try, you see that actually it's not true. There's a spark within, and you can't tell from the external countenance exactly what's going to happen. Are you making an offering? You're doing puja? You look like a bhajari to me. How old is he?
4.5.
That's about how old they were when I took them out. 6 months. And they've been going out ever since. And some of the kids are now 16, 17. They've been going out since they were 5. Of course, some of them are like 11, and they've been going out since they were 0. And that's not very old, 0. And now they're better than like a CEO. They could run an airline or something like that. Because Sankirtan prepares you for everything. It's the subtle jiu-jitsu. You know, like doing Sankirtan, talking to people, like we were today. We went out today. We went door to door to sell sets of Bhagavatams. And, you know, it's just subtle jiu-jitsu in a lot of ways. There's a lot of ways in which you develop psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, like anything, when you do book distribution. So the first reason that I advocate for anybody to do book distribution, and you don't have to do it a lot, even if you just do it every once in a while, and even just a little bit, it gives you that exhilaration of crossing the threshold out into the unknown. And then depending on Krishna. And when you do, you grow, because that's your growth zone. So first and foremost, it's for self-purification. Shridham, what's going on in there?
Um,
What are they doing?
You're being live streamed.
Is that right? Are you watching or? It sounds like you're building a car or something in there.
We're cutting flowers.
You're what? Oh, you are? Amazing. Getting ready for Ratha Yatra. Any questions? Yes?
There was a question earlier on how to keep the attention constant.
How to keep your intention constant. That's very difficult. It's very difficult to keep your attention constant. But one thing you can do is notice, be intentional when it goes away, then bring it back. It also helps to be on a schedule. That's why we do Vaidhi Bhakti. Vaidhi Bhakti means your attention doesn't naturally go to the holy names. It doesn't naturally go to Krishna. Because when you have ruchi, the ruchi is, makes it, when you get to the point of ruchi, you know what, you all know where that is? On the pathway to prema? Can anybody say? There's a verse that describes it. Adau shada tata sadusanga ta bhajana kriya tato narta nivritti sat nishta ruchis tata. So there's a ruchi comes just past anarta nivritti. Anarta nivritti means the time in which you're really distracted by a lot of things. In fact, there's five things that signify being in anarta nivritti. One of them is sleep. Not that you don't get enough rest every night, but just like when you start chanting or reading and then all of a sudden you just feel like sleeping instead. The second one is distraction. And that is when you're chanting or reading, or doing devotional service, you get distracted and your mind goes to other things. Possible?
Yes.
Please say yes.
Yes.
Okay. The next one is you're not sleepy and you're not distracted, but you just don't care. Mm-hmm. That's the M-E-H. It goes meh. And the next one means there are innate kinds of distracting qualities like anger, envy, lust. They all that just bubbles up every once in a while and distracts you from your devotional service. That's the number four. And number five is that your senses naturally trend towards grabbing onto their objects, and therefore you get taken away from your devotional service. When those five diminish, then you end up in ruchi. When those five are sufficiently diminished by the practice of devotional service. What are the five?
Sleep.
Distraction.
Meh.
The other ones are kind of a little related to each other. Yeah? Yeah, those kinds of things, that, like who knows where they come from? There's past lives, right? They're just in there and they come out. And then senses and their objects just mix it up and, you know, you're walking by the refrigerator, next thing you have a gallon of ice cream and a spoon in your hand. And so once you've practiced devotional service and those are diminished, this is the definition, the diminishment of those. Then you start coming into ruchi, and ruchi means that you actually have a positive taste. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says it's extremely easy for you to concentrate then. And you're able to disengage from other things and bring your mind back to devotional service. Whereas in anarta nivritti, it's not so easy. I'm looking at you like I'm answering your question because it came from over here. But then actually just past that comes asakti, which means attachment. And you're going to like this. In asakti, or attachment to devotional service and to the holy name, there's a way in which it's hard for you to keep your mind focused on your work because your mind's so attached to Krishna that you have to pull your mind away from Krishna to concentrate on the work that you're doing. Do you like that? Yeah. And then comes bhava, which is the preliminary stage before prema or love for God. There is a progression that takes place, and it happens naturally for those who engage in the nine processes of devotional service over a long period of time. And it very much helps to be physically engaged in devotional service because the senses need to be engaged. can't just sit down in here and chant all day long. So I advocate for, especially for Sankirtan, going out, organizing so that you can give it to other people. It takes a lot of work, doesn't it? What do you think takes the most work in getting your street parties out? What's the hardest part?
Going out the door.
The feeling of going out the door and just getting out there? Like, what about it that's hard? Can you describe it?
I think a lot of us want to go out, but we invent lots of different reasons why not.
Your mom's calling you for a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
And it's just getting the troops out on the front line.
I like that, yeah. My description of it is troop movement. I mean, there's the feeling of going out and sort of the hesitancy. Maybe it's, you know, warmer inside or more comfortable, or that at least I think I know what's going to happen if I stay back. But it's also just the logistics of getting from point A to point B, right? Like you guys, I've seen pictures of you all. You're moving stuff around, right? Like harmoniums, drums, you sit on a carpet. You got to move that stuff. It's not just, automatic. And so I call that troop movement. And wherever I teach about book distribution, Sankirtan, I always tell them that the hardest part of Sankirtan is what you said, getting out the door and also just moving from one point to another and getting to your spot. So we give a reward to everybody. The only thing you actually have to do when we do our Sankirtan festivals is to get from point A to point B, the place you've been assigned, and then touch the pavement. And once you touch the pavement like that, then you're done for the day. You don't have to do anything else, unless you feel like it. And we have everybody take a picture that they went out the door and touched the pavement at one place, and then send it through the WhatsApp, and everyone goes, hey, they touched the pavement. Every group touches the pavement. Then you don't have to do anything else, unless you feel like it. And when you take the pressure off, it's much easier. But you do have to figure out how to get in the car or whatever it is, whatever vehicle, and get to the place. And you realize that the name of the material world is apt. It's called Durga, which means Durgachati, means difficult to go. It's hard to move around in the material world. But once you get there, the rewards are huge. Any yajna takes a lot of work in the beginning to set it up, and it takes a lot of work to take it back down again. The actual yajna takes place in the middle, and it's only a little piece. Like a fire yajna, it takes forever to set it up. And taking it down, it's, you know, onerous. You have to take the fire outside, undo all the things you did, get the soot off the walls and everything like that. And in the middle, there's a few swahas, that's it. But that's the part that counts. And you can't have that part without the other parts. And when you actually set up the yajna, whatever it is, whether it's puja takes a long time to set up. You got to grow flowers. You have to grow tulsi. That takes a while. Then you have to get all the paraphernalia and set up. And every morning you go get it all together. And then when you're done, you have to wash everything again and put it back in its place, right? In the middle, you do the little puja. And it's just that little part. But that part is what really, you'll get the fruit from that. So Sankirtan's like that too. Just getting out the door, getting there. But book distribution's actually easy, isn't it? Say yes.
Yes.
Come on, everybody, say yes.
Yes.
Okay, repeat after me. Book distribution,
book distribution
is fun and easy.
It's fun and easy.
See? You feel better now? It is. It's fun and easy. The hard part is just in the mind. I'm thinking I'm going to get rejected, or I think I have to perform, I have to do this or that, or what are people going to think of me? It's all mental. But I'll teach you a trick how to get over that too. You wanted some tips, right? Do you want a tip how to overcome all fear and anxiety and never worry again? You better say yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Sit up straight. Reach behind your head. And just at the bottom of your head, you know, where your neck meets your head, you feel carefully, there's a little switch there. And when you flip the switch, you flip from being a human to a robot. Are you ready? When I say three, one, two, three, flip. No more worries, right? Humans worry, robots don't. I mean, why do humans worry? Because that's what they do. Every human worries. We're in the middle of the planetary systems, and we got a little heavenly, we got a little hellish situation in here, and we don't quite know what to do next, so we're always worried. But if you just flip the switch and you're not human anymore, you don't have to worry ever again. Do you like it? Feel better? So a lot of times when I walk out the door, I just flip the switch. And all I'm doing is, I'm a robot, I've been sent to my spot, and all I'm going to do is go through the motions. And don't worry about the results. Don't worry about anything going through the mind, because why would I care? I'm a robot now. So there's a way in which you can disengage your mind and just do your duty. Of course, you may have to flip the switch a few times. What other questions do you have? Yes. Yeah. I know how you feel. I feel like that all the time myself. And here's how I've overcome it. For some period of time, I had to go on book distribution by myself every day. And so one day, I didn't feel like going out on book distribution at all. But part of me thought, you know, you really should. So my mind said, you know, just forget it. We're not doing it. I said, okay, no problem. But then I thought, I'll just go out and I'll load the car up. I'll put some books in the car. And my mind said to me, why are you doing that? We're not going out today, right? And I said, no, we're not going out. All I'm doing is putting books in the car. It has nothing to do with anything. And so I did that, and then I went and got my book bag and my car keys, and my mind said, you know, now what are you doing? I said, I'm going to just go to see what it would have been like if I had gone out, but I'm not really going to go out. So I got in the car and I started driving. They said, where are you going? We're not going on book distribution. I said, I know. I'm just going to go look at the spot. And when I parked and I was on the street, my mind was saying, like, you know, you're actually on the street. You said you're not going to distribute. And then I'm not. I'm not going to do anything. And I was just walking down the street with my bag. And then I pulled the book out of my bag and I kept it in my hand. And my mind said, you know, you've really gone too far. And I said, no, I haven't done anything. Because actually all I'm doing is walking around with a book. And then as I was walking by, there was this lady walking the other direction. And I just I said, I'm not actually going to do anything. I'm just going to practice as if, like, I might have been. And I said, hi. And she said, hi. And she said, is that the Bhagavad Gita? And I showed it to her. And then I was explaining it to her. And by that time, my mind took a hike and wasn't around anymore. And then the lady said, when I asked for a donation, she said, I don't have any money. And my mind came rushing back. She said, I told you. And then she said, all I have is an ATM card. If I can find an ATM. And I looked, and right behind her, there was an ATM machine. I said, it's right there. And then I felt victorious because she turned around. She took it. And then I kept going. And another trick that I did when I was in the airport, was we used to distribute books in the airport. I had to go out by myself for a couple of years. And I made a card. And on the card, it had six categories. One category was I called somebody and they didn't look at me. They just kept walking like I didn't exist. Have you ever had that happen?
Yeah.
How does it feel? It's terrible. But my revelation, whenever that happens, is that that's what I've been doing to Krishna. And then there's the second category is I call the people, they look, they acknowledge me, and then they walk away, they don't come. Third category, I call them, they look, they come over, they look at the book, and then they walk away, they don't take it. The fourth category, they look, come over, look at the book, then they give a small donation. Next one, they look, come over, take the book, give a medium donation. And the third, the six categories, they come over and they give a huge donation. So I had a whole spectrum covered. And every day I took the same card out And every time I'd call somebody, it didn't matter whether they didn't look at me or they gave a huge donation or anywhere in between, I just put a little check mark in the box. And I discovered that over time, the box is just filled in. And I didn't care which category it was, as long as I was filling out the card. I just kept doing it. What was your question?
How to get out of the comfort zone.
Oh. One of the easiest ways to get out of your comfort zone is to go with friends and make it fun. So if you go out with your friends, then you get really insulated from the from any of the fear that's around, because you support each other. They're getting ready for Rath Yatra in there?
No idea.
One of the ways to, you know, is to be together and have fun. Just have fun when you go in Sankirtan. And share experiences, and also be in the mood of giving. Because if you have something to give people wherever you go, even if you can't give books, give prasadam, or give something. And another thing is you can get up and just do the, you know, greeting people and giving them something, and just start the very initial part of this. And don't push yourself too hard. And you'll see that Krishna will, if you get close enough to the edge, he kind of nudge you over, and he'll send somebody to you. Just practice staying near the edge, trying. Do you do it sometimes? To get it from the Harinam and try the book table and stuff?
Yeah, sometimes.
And how does it go?
I start speaking to somebody and then I get worried that I'm going to put them off. So I just
someone else. You get worried about what?
I get worried that I'm going to put them off.
Oh, put them off. So you ask somebody else to help you finish it?
Yeah.
That helps too sometimes. But one thing that really does help practically is to have a template in your mind of how to present. I have that white bag I brought. Is it here? Or maybe it's in here. In my seminars, I teach an infallible method of selling a Bhagavad Gita. And I guarantee it. If you follow my method, you'll be able to sell a Bhagavad Gita to anyone, at any time. And it doesn't matter who it is. It's a little different for Indians. I can teach you that one too. Here it is. And you can actually learn this template. I put it on one little card. How to sell a Bhagavad Gita on its own merit. It's right here. And we teach this in our seminars before we go out on book distribution, the method of selling a Gita. And there's just a few steps on the back. And once you learn it, you'll have a lot of confidence and you just go through. Sometimes people take this card, they're just trying for the first time, and I tell them to tell people that they're a trainee, they've never done this before, that I have to follow this card, can you help me out? So the people hold the card for you and say, okay, this is what you're supposed to say next. And actually they have a lot of compassion because you're just trying. If you're just real with them, they'll appreciate it. And when it comes to the donation part, you know, they say, read the donations. Okay, I'm supposed to give a donation right now? And they go, yep, yeah, sure. And they go, okay. I'll give something. But it helps to have a little template, a little training, and if you watch somebody who's doing it for a while, you'll gain confidence. And then gradually you'll have a few successes that will convince you that you can do it. And then you just practice. And I'll teach you another, please go ahead, and then I'll say. I'll just teach you one principle that really helps with book distribution, that takes away a lot of the nervousness and fear factor, and that is to pick the ripe fruits. So when you go to pick fruits from a tree, which ones do you pick first?
Ripe.
How do you know they're ripe? Let's say they're mangoes.
The color.
Yeah, color. Do they feel any different?
Softer.
smell any different? You can tell ripe from unripe, right? And so when you go to a mango tree, you don't grab onto the mangoes that are green and they won't come off, and then you try to break the branch off, right? Say no. Right. And then you drag it down the street. Same thing when you go out to meet people, all you have to do is look for the ripe fruits. When you find a ripe fruit, let me tell you what a ripe fruit is. As a ripe fruit is someone who has a positive response when you greet them. And you could try this really quick. I'll show you how to do it. You ready? Everyone will do it. Hold up your right hand. Point it towards somebody. There's a powerful beam that comes out of your hand. Now point your hand like this. The beam comes out of here, but don't point it at me because I can't handle it all. And now you activate it by saying a mantra, hi.
Hi.
Now, did you hear the reaction in the room when you did that? What was it? Everyone sort of laughed and was smiling, and that's because you're all ripe fruits. It's true. Now, if you go like this, somebody walking down the street, hi. I do it all the time, even when we're driving, because you never know someone walking down the side, I'm hi. And then they're like, hi. You know, last time I was here, we were on one-sided street. It was a long way away. Yeah. We were going door to door. I was on one side of the street. It must have been 100 meters to the other side where this guy was in front of his house. He was a gardener. And no shirt on, just a hat. And I was knocking on somebody else's door, and I saw him looking at us from across the way, and I went, hi! And he put up his hand, hi. And I could tell it was a positive exchange. I could see from 100 meters. So I ran across the street. He was deaf and mute. And I wrote everything on my notepad and showed it to him, and he went in the house and gave 20 quid and came out. But it was a very moving experience. All the devotees had come by that time. And I had caught him by a conscious connection. So wherever you go, the first step is to make a conscious connection with people and then assess whether they're a ripe fruit or unripe fruit. And all you have to do is this, hi, hi, hi. You pretending to be an unripe fruit. And then the next thing, a basic principle, is that you have to become a master asker. What do you have to become?
Master asker.
Because question marks are the most powerful punctuation mark in any language. Because when you ask a question, you're leading the conversation. So instead of telling people, you ask them questions. And whoever asking the questions is leading the conversation. Who's leading the conversation? Whoever's asking the questions. So you have a lot of questions in you. So in the presentation I give, the next thing I do is ask him a question. And I'll tell him where I'm from first, preemptively, and then I'll ask where they're from. I'm from California. Where are you from?
London.
London? I love London. I'm from California. Where are you from?
London.
London. I love London. Now, this is the most genius thing that was ever invented, is the fist bump. Because it's very non-committal. If you have to do this, it's just not happening. It's too much. Too much commitment. But anybody can do this. It's just a little human interaction, boom, like that. Doesn't mean much, except it actually attracts people from a long distance away. So I'm California. Where are you from?
London.
I love London. He could be like, you know, 10 meters away or something. I start going like this, and people put up their hand, and they're still walking, and they turn around and come back. They have to make the connection. And so then I ask them, that's the qualifying question. I'm from California. Where are you from? And they say, London. And I say, fantastic. Can I have a Bhagavad Gita? That's a real question.
Just there.
You have a hardback?
Yeah.
Thank you. Now some pundit lives here. That is what you call a good sign. That was worth coming over here just to see that. So then, he's from London. I love London. Here, I'll show you one too. Say show. Show.
Show.
Show. Show. Because you're not selling, you're not giving, but when you say show, it's a very, like, anybody can show anything. It's a very innocuous term. So from, I'll say, from California to London. Did you see that? Watch. California to, I'm assuming, London. London. Did you see that? You put book out and the hand comes out. Because the mind might be saying, I'm not interested. But the hand's going, no, I'll take it. And just reaches out because that's its dharma. It grabs stuff. So you put the book in their hand. And then when I'm handing the book over, I say books on yoga and meditation that shows you how to get free from stress. Now I should ask a question, right? You've heard of stress, right? Really, because you don't look stressed to me. In fact, you look very peaceful. In fact, you look spiritual. Turn to somebody next to you and tell them they look spiritual. Now, let me ask you a question. How does that make you feel when they tell you you look spiritual? How do you feel? You feel spiritual, right? No, how about if you walk in out of your ashram one day and someone comes up to you and goes, you look tired, how do you feel? The rest of the day you're looking in the mirror going, I do? I must be tired. But if you say you look spiritual, it's instant self-realization because then they, all of a sudden you go, hey, yeah, right, I am spiritual. And then here's the question of the century. If you don't learn anything else from this short talk, you can take this away. Ask this question. What's your secret? Say it.
What's your secret?
Now ask somebody next to you.
What's your secret?
So now here's the psychology behind this. And this is the crux of how to distribute books to anyone at any time and be successful. It's an attitude. And the attitude is that you are my teacher. You're my teacher, I'm your student. You, when you meet people, you put them on the Vyasa sign and you sit down below. And you treat them as if they're the teacher. Because the main reason that people don't want to take a look at the book is they think that you're condescending. And they think that you're trying to interrupt their flow of life and give them something that they didn't ask for, right? But if you tell them they're spiritual, that's the first thing. They look spiritual, and they are, because that's what they are. They're spiritual. And then you ask them what's their secret, then you're putting them in a position of authority. What's your secret? You must just come from a good family. Yeah! Well, you do anyway. But the fact is that people in the mode of ignorance, they'll tell you their secret. They smoke marijuana. People in the mode of passion, they work really hard. People in the mode of goodness, they do yoga. Other people say, you know, I believe in such and such, whatever it is. But they'll tell you something. If they don't have anything, you can suggest something to them, like you must come from a good family. And I've had some people know, no, I really don't. And then I say, you must just be a natural. And they go, all right. And then after I tell them that, I say, here, I'll show you really quick. So I take the book back. And I start showing them the book. And the first thing I show them, this back cover, which this one doesn't have, in which there's Thoreau, Emerson, Gandhi. What do you have on the back of your books? That's a really old one. There's some list of people who have read the Bhagavad Gita on the back, like Thoreau and Emerson and Gandhi. That's all right. I'll just say it. And then we'll get it. Does?
That's Thoreau and Gandhi.
Okay. I'm collecting. I show them the people in the back, and then I turn to the front cover, and actually, I stop in the middle, and I show them the Sanskrit. I say, can you read this? What do you think they say? Can you read that? I was just testing you. This has actually been translated in English, and this book's been translated over 400 times. Out of all the different versions, this has become the most popular academically. Georgetown University, USC, they've used this book. And then I turn to the pictures, and I show them changing bodies. Have you all seen changing bodies before?
Yeah.
Do you take it for granted now? You've seen it so many times? Other people don't because they've never seen this before. and it actually freaks them out. I mean, you just show them this picture and say, look, we start here, we end up here, we're just passing through, life's a quick journey, and then you can say, where are you in this? Let the record show, he said, it was right here. And then I turn to the page that shows the sage, that's the humble sage, who sees equally, and I say, look, a self-realized person treats everyone with respect, because he or she sees the spirit in everyone's heart. And then I ask this question. You've heard of karma, right? Have you all heard of karma?
Yes.
What does it mean to you? Whoa. I really like the way you put things. If more people in the world thought like you, it would be a better world to live in. Ask me. Let's try it again. You've heard of karma before, right? What does it mean to you?
It means every action has a opposite reaction.
Whoa. I really like the way you put things. If more people in the world thought like you, it'd be a better world to live in. Okay, now you ask me what karma means, and you got to be demonstrative and go, whoa, I really like the way you put things. If more people in the world thought like you, it'd be a better world to live in. Okay, everyone ask me, what does karma mean to you?
What does karma mean to you?
You know, like there's rainbows and rabbits and all kinds of crazy stuff. Go ahead.
Whoa.
No. Go like this. You really got to act on this one. Go, whoa. I really like the way you put things. If more people in the world thought like you, a better world. So ask me again. I don't know, man. It's just like cosmic, you know?
Whoa.
I really like the way you put things.
Better world to live in. Yeah, and then from there, and sometimes we have a whole group, and the person will say, what does it mean, karma mean to you? And they'll go, what goes around comes around, and like 20 people go, whoa! And then, did you bring me a Gita? It's funny, in a Hare Krishna house, you can't get the Gita you want. You know the picture of the sage? Do you have that one in there? With the sage coming out of his head? The soul leaving his head?
Yeah.
You have that? Here it is. Okay, then this comes part, I go, what do you do professionally?
I'm a university student.
What kind of student are you? What are you studying? What part?
Computer science.
Pure science, look it. This guy was in computer science. What do you do professionally? What's your major? Computer science.
No, I don't study.
What is it?
I don't study anything specific.
This guy didn't study anything. So when you tell him that, 50% of the people, as soon as you tell them, they say, ha, ha, ha. And the other 50% say, really? And then you say, no, not really, I'm just kidding. And then they say, ha, ha, ha. And as soon as they say, ha, ha, right, I'm holding the book, then say, ha, ha, ha. We don't sell it like in a bookstore. We only ask for donation. We don't need the money. The only reason we ask is when you give something in return for spiritual knowledge, it connects you to the previous teachers who have passed it down over many generations and allows you to enter deeply within the knowledge. Just give the most you can. Give.
Give your donation.
Is it a 10, iPhone 10? I'll take it. And then they give a donation. And there's more to say about the donation, but let me just say about donations in general, the philosophy behind it. And that is, the reason we ask for a donation is because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, don't share this knowledge with people who are not devoted or austere. So how are you going to know if they're devoted or austere? Is it an austerity to give a donation? Mm-hmm. How can you tell? How can you tell it's an austerity to give a donation?
I'm looking at
the
wallet and
like... That's right. It's like asking, can I burn your finger with a cigarette lighter? You know, they're like... you know, when you ask for money, people kind of look like hesitant because it's a little bit of a trouble for them. It's a little austerity. That's why we ask. And when they're able to break that barrier and give something, Prabhupada told us, when they give something in return, then they'll think, I just gave my hard-earned $10 to this rascal, he said. So now let me see what's in the book. So, yes, Prabhu.
The interesting thing is though, often we short-sell ourselves by saying, you know, give a donation, a pound or something, because we want to just cover the printing cost. Whereas I've been in your seminars where you aim high, and if they give something lower, you swap it with a small book.
No, I don't swap. Generally, I try not to swap, because when I ask for donate, if I'm showing the book and they feel attached to it, I let them have it, because I feel like if somebody swaps on them, then they'll remember that and they'll think, you know, hey, he showed me this book and now we swap for a smaller one. If you want to get larger donations, just ask for them, because if you ask for larger donations, then say if you ask for 100 quid from somebody, it's a possibility they'll give it, right? Say yes. Yeah, it's possible. If you ask for 5 quid, is it possible that they'll give 100?
No.
Much less likely. So you can just try it. And with book distribution, one thing you can do is I like to call core and explore. So core means 80% of the time you know what works. And you know what you're comfortable with, you just do that. And then 20% of the time, go outside your comfort zone and try stuff, say stuff that you've never said before. Or go to spots you've never been to before, try different kinds, because you'll have breakthroughs when you do that. That's again staying out of your comfort zone just a little bit. But as far as donations, you were gonna say, sorry, I unceremoniously interrupted you.
We short sell ourselves by saying, give us a pound or something. Now, to be honest, for people that live in London, a pound, 2 pounds, 3 pounds is, you don't feel the pinch, you don't feel like, okay, my heart, you know, this principle of hard-earned money, is you just waste a pound here and there and everything all day long, especially with tapping a card now that you can actually pick out money and give it to someone and just tap. So how do you overcome, if you don't yet feel comfortable saying, you know, give a donation, £10, £15, because you're accustomed to saying, you know, give us a pound or so. Because I often feel that the person gives it because of a personal connection, not because they really feel the value of the book. So they just give it, they walk away, and then you might find the book on the sidewalk, like a couple of meters down, because they haven't really spent a lot on it.
Well, as far as leaving the book behind, we asked Prabhupada about that, because people used to leave the book sometimes. Because naturally, we were doing a lot of book distribution constantly, and so there was a percentage of people leave the book behind, and we brought that problem to Prabhupada. And he said, what do you expect? He said, in this age, people even leave their babies behind. He said, you know, people have a baby, they have an abortion, and he said they throw away everything. So don't be discouraged by that. Also, another question, people used to steal books from us because we go up, we were young. How old are you all?
Young.
Anyway, I started when I was young. And, you know, people are like, hey, kid, what are you doing? You know, take a look at this. Thanks! You know, and they just take it. And that happened a lot. And we asked Prabhupada, and you know what he said? Lucky thief. And so, the thing is that I like to be more liberal, and I do try to make sure that people have a modicum of interest, or they give it some donation, but I'd rather keep the flow going out. And at ISKCON of Silicon Valley, we've had that since the very beginning. I just told the devotees, be very liberal, and make sure the books are all going out. Everything else will come back in. You don't have to be too conservative. And, you know, in the last several years, that little community there, which is mostly householders and kids, has broken through as the number three temple in the world as far as remittance to the BBT. They gave $500,000 last year and the year before just from one temple. And one of the reasons is that mood of giving. It just goes out. And oftentimes people say, I don't have any money. And then I'll just say, that's all right, just give a penny. Or here you say pence, I guess. And then one of the reasons that they say that I don't have any money, it's not true that they don't have money. It's very rare. But one of the reasons they say it is they're embarrassed. They don't know how much to give. Because they think if I give too little, I'll be insulting the person who's showing the book. And then they also don't want to give too much because they're attached. So they get stuck in this little box. They go, I don't have any money. That's what I don't have any money means, that I don't know how much to give. So a lot of times, let's say, that's all right, just give one penny. And that kind of breaks it open and they'll give something. I wrote about it in my book. It's called The Penny Principle. One thing about the penny principle is that if somebody starts somewhere and gives something, Prabhupada told us this, that starts their devotional practice. And he told us a story about the brahmacharya who was begging door to door. And there was a householder couple inside and they were having an argument. So they were in a bad mood. So when the brahmacharya came begging for the temple, the man in the house opened the door and he said, "What do you want?" And he said, "We're just begging alms." And the man turned to his wife and said, "Get some ashes." So he brought some ashes out and threw it in his cloth and said, "Here, get out of here. Take the ashes and go." So the brahmacharya took the ashes very carefully back to the pujari at the temple, said, "Use these to polish all the deity's paraphernalia because it's good for brass." And 3 months later, he was walking in the same neighborhood and the couple saw him outside their door and they came out and offered dandavats. And Prabhupada said, from one pinch of ash, back home, back to Godhead. That was his mood. Take one little thing. And so, you know, we were just telling earlier at the other house, somebody asked me to tell the story about the cigarette lighter. You know, two hippies, a hippie couple were walking down the street and they were looking at the Bhagavad Gita and they said, "I don't have any money." And I said, "Well, just check." And they checked everywhere. They really didn't. But he said, he pulled out his cigarette lighter. The guy did, and said, "Well, you don't want this, do you?" And I said, "No, I'll take it." And I could see when I said that, he was thinking I shouldn't have said anything, because he was really attached to it. And they got a Bhagavad Gita for the price of one cigarette lighter. And I took that lighter home, and I purified it about 10 times. And I used it for my Shalagram puja. And every time I light it, I think they're getting some kind of Bhakti Sukriti from this. And so it's more, and sometimes people say, "I don't have any money at all." And because they're interested and they paid attention for a little while, I'll let them have the book anyway. So letting books go out, it always makes up for it, because then somebody else will come along and give much more and it balances out. So it's 7:32.
Yeah, you got to catch a flight.
I don't have anything to do, but I'm more worried about you, because you probably all have to get going for duties for Rath Yatra and stuff like that.
I should probably have to catch a flight.
I don't have to catch a flight. I'm not going anywhere. Okay. But if you have to go, then.
Does anyone have any questions? I had one idea. I wondered if, for just the next 5 or 10 minutes before you leave, if you could just run through a couple of lifetime role plays.
Sure, I'll do that. In fact, I think it's good if some of you try it. So, who would like to volunteer? 2 devotees. They can stand up here, and I'll guide you through it, and I'll show you. Actually, let's start with one. You come up. You were just volunteered from the side. Come up here, and I'll do it with you. Could I have? Thank you. Appreciate it. You stand over here, and I'll stand here. And the first thing is to make a conscious contact with people. So I stay back a little bit, and I don't keep the book in my hand, because this telegraphs that I'm coming after you. And if they see you from down the street, they'll think, the guy's going to attack me with a book. So I keep the book either under my arm, or I keep it in my bag, or on the table, whatever the case may be. Can you all see from back there? And then I'm making conscious contact with people. So let's say you're walking from there, and hi.
Hi.
So ripe or unripe fruit?
Ripe.
Definitely ripe. You know, he was smiling. He immediately responded to me. Try being back up a little bit and come in. Try being an unripe fruit. Hi.
Hi.
Just don't. He can't do it. He's too ripe. Go back. Just don't say anything. Pretend I don't exist. See, it's natural. Hi. He's smiling. He can't do it. All right. So as soon as I make a conscious contact, hi. Hi. Okay. You can be right now. You can be right. Hi.
Hi.
California. Where are you from?
India.
I love India. This is from San Francisco, California to India. Books on yoga and meditation that show you how to get free from stress. You've heard of stress before, right?
Yeah.
Really, because you don't look stressed. You look very, in fact, don't mind me saying this, but you look spiritual. What's your secret?
I just do yoga.
I knew it. Here, I'll show you really quick. Thoreau, Emerson, Gandhi, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Albert Einstein, the Beatles, they all read this book. Of course, India, I'll just, after this, I'm going to show you how I talk to Indians, because it's completely, it's not like this. This is for Westerners, but just, let's just say he's a Westernized Indian. Can you read that? Say no.
Yeah. Okay, no.
No. No. Well, I was just testing you. This has been translated many times into English. In fact, it's been translated over 400 times. Out of all the different versions, this has become the most popular academically. You've heard of USC?
Yep.
Georgetown University? And here it is in a nutshell. Look it. We're all just passing through. We start here, we end up here. Where are you in all this?
Over there.
Yeah, I'm over here. I was here 5 minutes ago. Yeah. And look it. A self-realized person treats everyone with respect because he or she sees the spirits in everyone's heart. You've heard of karma, right?
Yeah.
What does it mean to you?
It goes around, comes around.
Whoa! I really like the way you put things. If more people in the world thought like you, it would be a better world to live in. What do you do professionally?
I'm a student.
What kind of student?
Aeronautical engineer.
Get out of here. Look, this guy used to be an aeronautical engineer. We don't sell it like in a bookstore. We only ask for donation. We don't need the money. But it's an ancient tradition. When you give something in return for spiritual knowledge, it connects you to the previous teachers who have passed it down over many generations and allows you to enter deeply within the knowledge. You can give whatever you like. The books, don't give any obstacles, just give. they cost, with printing and shipping, they cost us around 10 to print. Anything you give over that is a donation. That's something you can add in if you want to help them a little bit. But whatever mood you're in, you can say give whatever you like, and you can just depend on Krishna for how much they give. Or you can say something like, they cost, with printing and shipping, they cost about 10 quid. And anything over that is a donation. Or they might say, how much should I give? Is that possible?
Yes.
Then I say, we try to keep it under 100, but in your case, we're thinking about making an exception. Okay, so give something. I'm just telling him, not the person. Okay, go ahead. I say, I don't have any cash. Okay. Say, I don't have any cash.
I don't have any cash.
Oh, good, we don't take cash. We take MasterCard, Visa, a credit or debit. And then you have your slider, right? You have your little machine? Some people say, I don't have any cash. Yeah, we don't take cash. We take MasterCard, Visa. And you just kind of roll right into it, you know. Okay, so you can just give a donation. No, I mean, just go ahead and give.
I would just go.
Okay, so now he's giving a donation. Thank you. Just tell us how it feels. No. Do you believe in the power of prayer?
Yes.
Okay, now I have a mantra card. Anyone? Okay, let's say I have a mantra. Here, I'll give you one. I'll just say I have a mantra card. So then I say, I hand him a card. Now, what if he says no? I say, do you believe in the power of prayer? Say no.
No.
Perfect. I'll give you a mantra. And then you hand him the card. And then you say, this is a beautiful, if it's a mantra, you say it's a mantra meant to for self-realization. Or you can say, if it's a prayer, it's meant to wake up love for God in your heart. And it's a little hard to say, so I'll say it one time and you'll learn how to do it. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Krishna
Krishna. Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Rama Rama.
Rama Rama.
Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
You're a natural. In here. This is for being so kind. Thank you for taking your valuable time. And if it's somebody that seems particularly interested, you can take their contact information. Would you like to be on our mailing list, find out where classes, more information? So they have write it down and thank him at the end. So we've got a book and the prasadam and the holy name, right? And you leave him with a good impression. Thank you very much. And he gets his money back. So, all right, so that's a template that anyone can follow. And normally what we do at our seminars is we have everybody try it once. They, you know, present to one person and they present back the other way. You can practice it.
Two questions come from this. One is, how do you stay focused on this person and not get distracted looking either side or thinking, how do you just stay focused on that person? And the second question is...
Well, let me answer the first one first. And that is by experience, because I've had this happen before where I'm talking to somebody and then I think, oh, that guy looks much better. Mm. And then the person notices. Yeah. Here's how long it takes somebody to feel that you don't care about them. That's how long it takes. Like half a second. If you're talking to somebody, you go like that. They'll go, oh, you have to go? You're looking at your watch, and if you look at other people. So what has happened then, it reminds me of this story Prabhupada used to tell. There was a dog, and he got a piece of food in his mouth, and he was going across on a boat, really happy he got the food. And then he looked in the water, and he saw in the water, he saw a reflection of a dog that also had a meat in its mouth. And then he lunged at it, and then he lost both things. So I've had so many times, I look at somebody else, and they lose this person, and the other person says, no, I'm not interested, and then both of them. It's better just to stay concentrated on the one person. That helps.
And the second thing is, you've shaken the hand, thank you. You're confident that you've left them with a good impression, but then it can be immediately, a few seconds later, that you try and stop someone else, and that person thinks, he's just doing this to everyone. He didn't really kind of care about me. He's just doing this to everyone. Do you wait a little bit for that person to leave the scene and then move on the next? I'm just thinking from that person's perspective, this is like, they gave me so much love and attention, and he's just doing this all day. He's just a salesman.
Well, the real thing is to actually give love and attention. And, you know, actually feel it. Like today, we were out and we really did feel like we were giving love and attention, they were giving it back. So if you do it from the heart, you won't necessarily have to divide it up. It's not some mechanical thing. It's not just a line. And the only reason I teach a template is so that you can deviate from it later and do your own thing. It's like jazz, you know, you learn all the scales, you know it perfectly, and then you can really improvise and go from there. It really helps. All right. Thank you very much, everybody, for taking your time. When I come back here, which is in a week, I'm just going now for the BBT meetings in Italy, and I'm coming back. And when I do come back, we're going to go out and do this book distribution in several places. Are we not?
Yes, ma'am. Yes. And Saturday, they're in different towns.
Okay. And I will, anybody who's interested, I will personally take you around and show you how to distribute books. You can watch as close as you like, and I don't care how many people follow me around. I've had as many as 52 at one time. that was door to door. And you'll see that it's a very heartfelt kind of thing. There is a template, but it just helps you to stay on track. And you'll see that it's fun and easy. I guarantee you, I promise you, once you learn this, a few things, and I show you a couple ways to distribute the books, and I didn't tell you about Indians, but that takes about 5 seconds, then you'll be able to distribute the Bhagavad Gita to anyone, anywhere, at any time. And also, tomorrow during Rath Yatra, all you have to do with these is hand them to people. And then you can describe what's in each book. I recommend tying a little tighter, though. The ribbon's slightly loose on this. And you can just ask people, say, you look very intelligent. Are you a reader? On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you like to read? 10 being like the most. And then you can describe a little bit what each book's about. This one teaches This one's been read by Thoreau, Emerson, the Beatles. We're hoping to put your name on the list. And then... Science of Self-Realization shows you the difference between the body and the spirit. Veda, it's a compendium of different articles about meditation and yoga. And you just give one line for each one of these books and explain to them. And then you can ask them how much do you think these would be, like in a bookstore, like you have Barnes & Noble here or something like that. And, you know, they usually say 100, 150, 200, 500, all kinds of guesses. And you say, they're only 7 each for these. At least that's what we're doing in New York. And for the whole thing, it's 49. And anything you give over that is a donation. We sold over 60 sets like this just in one afternoon at the Rath Yatra. And one of the reasons is because when you bunch things, they're really beautiful, aren't they?
Yeah.
All these together. When you hand it to somebody, see what I'm saying? Then the transfer is made. It's really, jivas get attached to that because they like knowledge. They're from the Chit Shakti, so they want to keep it. And $49 is not much to walk away with a set, so you can try that. And the last thing I'll tell you is about Indians. And how does Srimad Bhagavad Gita to Indians? And the first is don't hand them a book because it's an insult to them. They don't like it. So when I meet Indians, I don't hand them anything. I just tell them what we're doing. And I say that what we're doing, I first explain, say, what we're doing is trying to solve a lot of the world's problem from the spiritual level. Because a lot of complexities in the world these days. Do you agree? And they can't be solved from a material platform. So as you know better than me, the Bhagavad Gita gives spiritual solutions to the world's problems. So what we're doing is starting schools all over the world to teach Bhagavad Gita to young people, not just here in the UK or in America, but also in Japan, in China, in Australia, all over Europe, and in Russia. And we print them in many different languages. And we're doing a fundraiser. And we're asking for money. And the reason we're asking for money is to spread Lord Krishna's teachings around the world and spiritual solutions. So we just ask everyone to give a donation. Is that okay? And they'll immediately say yes. And they'll, if they're standing on the street, they'll pull out their wallet. If they're in their house, they'll go to the back of the house, bring back their checkbook or whatever, and they'll give a donation. Because Indians like to give to a spiritual cause. But if you hand them the book first, they'll say, you know, I already know this. My mother knows it. My grandmother memorized this. And so I tell them, this is not for you. We're doing this for others. And after they give the donation, then you can give as many books as you want, including the Bhagavad Gita, and it won't feel insulting. And that's 95% of Indians will give you a donation and take a bunch of books if you do it in reverse order like that. Is that okay? Worth the price of admission, just for that information. Maybe I'll see you all again next time. That's next.
Next week, Saturday, Maharaj, they will be in Crawley. SSP is joining us in Crawley, where we'll be doing a program. So we'll have about 45 minutes, an hour also to go out after the program in Crawley with the devotees here. And then following Sunday the 30th, some of the devotees are going to come to Birmingham, Maharaj, in the coach as well for the monthly Sankirtan festival.
Okay.
They have a request, Maharaj. They wanted to read out the scores.
Great.
For today's being out. So if you go ahead. Yes.
You just came back.
Yes.
You were out there today. Bravo. Oh, really. This is amazing what you're doing. It's fantastic. Really good.
We distributed 7 small books.
Hariwa!
10 medium.
Hariwa!
2 big.
Hariwa!
8 maha big.
Hariwa!
And that totals up to 27 transcendental books.
Hariwa!
We were able to collect £104 and
wow.
2 euros.
Hariwa! That's amazing. Did any of you have any experiences that you wanted to report back on in selling a book? Who sold the books? You did it? You did some.
I was speaking to one gentleman. He liked in essence.
Yes.
And give him a little touch of that in essence. And I just told him this is a teaching of the Prabhupada and Lord Krishna, and he completely convinced, and he took it and gave the euros, the coins of euros, and
that's where those euros came from. It's nice.
And didn't have any naturally, so he gave that.
Well, that's Lakshmi too, right? Thanks, fantastic, bravo, and congratulations to all of you. It's really well done, and your example here is sending out a beacon of encouragement to people all over the world, young people. And as you continue to do this, then you'll develop your spiritual practices in a really powerful way from doing this combination of hearing and chanting together and also going out to distribute. So I better all let you go so you can do your preparation for Rath Yatra and everything, and thank you very much for coming. Vancha kalpada vrishcha kripa sindabe vacha patitanam pavanibhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha nanta koti vaishnavinikki jaya Srila Prabhupada ki jaya Gaura Premanande Hari Bhava.
Let us thank Vaisheshi Prabhu for his time, his demonstration, his wisdom, and also suggest that Lord will pray for us and the SSP project. And Panda the same as growth. So three loud Hari Bol for each time.
Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Hari Bol!
It's very special, Shri Prabhu Ki.
Marman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, hey, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman.